Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Probably my favorite way to pass time during the offseason is ripping on Florida coach Dan Mullen. We've got a great opportunity to do that here today. And there are a couple pretty significant recruiting storylines I need to cover with Jeff Sintel. So we'll get to all that coming up on the program in just a couple of minutes. Let me begin, though, with this. What I thought was a really interesting exchange on Twitter yesterday. Mike Griffith, our own from Dog Nation, was promoting some of his work on Twitter. I'll show you his tweet where he says, hey, there's some questions for the Georgia offensive line this season heading into spring practice. And no doubt that's true, even though this is an elite body right now, probably the best offensive line on paper Georgia's ever had. Mike's probably right and fair to say there are some questions about how so-and-so is going to be replaced, Lamont Gilyard maybe in particular, and some of the other issues. And somebody had, or at least an entity had seen Mike's tweet on that and added a little more context to the situation involving Georgia's offensive line. Now, I thought this was really interesting. It comes from the Football Writers Association of America. That's the kind of group that would never allow me to be a member, but certainly they're interesting with some of their takes on certain things. And so they retweeted Mike when it comes to the Georgia offensive line and added this, and I do think this is kind of interesting. The Football Writers Association says, Georgia has not had an Outland Trophy recipient. Now, the Outland Trophy is an award that goes to the best interior lineman each year, offensive or defensive. Georgia hasn't had a guy win this award since 1968 when the great Bill Stanfill won it. The Football Writers go on to say he is the Bulldogs' only winner. Alabama's had five recipients since 1999, which is an amazing performance by the Crimson Tide, no doubt. And then the Football Writers go on to say that four of those Alabama winners have been on the offensive line. Will this be Georgia's year? Then there's a whole thing about vaccines and flu, and I don't really know what any of that has to do with anything. I don't know if that's spam or what, but the overall point that Georgia has not had an Outland Trophy winner since 68. Alabama's had a bunch of them. Georgia trying to keep pace with Alabama. Could this be the year that Georgia does that? Now, I think that's interesting for two reasons. Georgia has had national award winners with the last two seasons. DeAndre Baker won the Thorpe Award last season. Roquan Smith won the Buckus Award the season before that. I think there's a real cachet to Georgia when you have national award winners like that. I think it makes the program look cool in the moment, but it also sets the stage for the next generation of player to want to follow in those footsteps. There'll be defensive backs that choose Georgia because of DeAndre Baker. There'll be linebackers already that have chosen Georgia because of Roquan Smith. And if Georgia indeed produces a lineman like that this year, the way the Football Writers Association suggests, that'll no doubt open the door for more recruitment for Georgia. Now, the obvious point here is that if Georgia does produce one of those Outland Trophy winners this year for the first time in a long time, I think it stands to reason that the most likely candidate for that is Georgia's left tackle, Andrew Thomas. He's already made a name for himself, but he could be ready to take the next step with his development, and that could make big, big news for Georgia and pave a trail for even more success for the program. Now, a lot of you are aware of Thomas's credentials, but it's probably worth pointing out a little bit more here. We talked yesterday on the show about the fact that Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm was at that symposium running concurrently to the NFL scouting combine in Indianapolis. They were kind of held off, according to ESPN, away from the watchful eye of the press. You couldn't really see them. You wouldn't really know they were there, but they were there learning about, you know, what it's going to take to be the next great NFL draft pick and how to make that transition successful. Jake Fromm was one of the Georgia players there. Andrew Thomas was the other, because the odds are, assuming Thomas stays healthy, and I guess maybe even if he doesn't, it's hard to imagine Thomas won't be drafted very high in next year's NFL draft as a junior leaving early. That means when Georgia fans watch Georgia this season, they're going to be watching one of the 5 or 10 best players in the entire country at his position. It's Andrew Thomas. NFL riches are coming his way, but also another one of those national awards could be coming too. In a lot of ways, it's really kind of the culmination of what has been a complete and total transformation of the Georgia offensive line since Kirby Smart became the head coach of this program. I think one of the blights on the Mark Richt era was maybe not enough of an emphasis on great offensive linemen, and the Georgia program, I think, kind of suffered because of that. But since Kirby Smart's been here, since Sam Pittman's been here, it has been a total transformation, and Thomas has been the leader of that. So it seemed fitting that he might get honored with another national award for the program at the end of the season. And by the way, speaking of that transformation of the Georgia offensive line, apparently this is something that Thomas takes really seriously, because as he gets ready to go into his third season as a starter, let's go back to Thomas at the beginning of what was going to be his second season last year as a sophomore. Thomas was a big believer that the Georgia reputation needed to be changed, apparently, and he wanted to be the catalyst for doing just that. His words then prove prophetic now. Here is Andrew Thomas.
Well, we just tried to change the culture, and basically we just play physical every day. And it starts in practice. We practice hard every day. It starts with our O-line coach, Coach Pittman, and he just pushes us to be the best we can be.
I love that very succinct, simple quote from Andrew Thomas. We want to be known as a physical offensive line. We want to change the culture around here. That starts with me. It's led by Sam Pittman, and it's on the field, on display for everybody in America to see. There's no denying that's been the case for Georgia. As Georgia moves into 2019 as a legitimate national championship threat and contender, the offensive line is the biggest reason why, and the elite nature of the offensive line, the guy most responsible for that, is Andrew Thomas. So if the Outland Trophy is out there and available to be won, I, for one, would love to see Thomas bring it home. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Thanks for being with us. Live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Radio at noon as well on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form wherever you find podcasts. We also post the show each day at theworldfamousdognation.com. Thanks for checking us out today. Later on in today's show, we shall have another opportunity for a Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway. Now, I'll announce yesterday's winner and tell you how you can win the t-shirt for today. That's all coming up later today on Dog Nation Daily as a part of Road to Atlanta. Really fun stuff there. It's Jeff Sintel here in a couple of minutes, too, as part of our Marlo Stavern tell-all. And for those of you who may have missed this, Jeff and I had a chance to be chefs last week, and it was really fun. I completely dominated Jeff in an online campaign and a survey vote, if you will. I came away a big winner. I'll gloat about that coming up with Jeff in a couple of minutes. There are also some really serious recruiting issues we need to get into with Mr. Sintel, so we'll do all that coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, and I mentioned this off the top, gotta take a little bit of umbrage with our buddy Florida coach Dan Mullen. Now, I'm going to talk about one thing, and this is going to kind of lead us into something else that's been on my mind a bit too, but all of this I think is really important as spring practice gets going around the SEC and people start to formulate their opinions what the 2019 season is going to be about. I have never seen a coach like Mullen use a Peach Bowl victory and allow that to go to his head as much as Mullen treats what happened for Florida in last year as if he's some sort of conquering hero. A guy that's never won either of the two SEC divisions in the entire time that he's been an SEC coach all of a sudden feels like that he is of such a dignified status that he ought to be giving advice to other coaches. Well, my simple advice to Mullen would be, how about you worry about coaching your own team? But nonetheless, Mullen was generous enough to share his thoughts on quarterback recruitment. Thomas Goldkamp, a reporter on hand as Mullen was speaking, I guess this is a way of kind of kicking off Florida spring practice. But here's what Mullen says about quarterback recruiting. He says, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys were coming in and then immediately walking out the door because it was something different than they thought it would be, and we lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true. Now, Thomas Goldkamp's inference here is the same as many other people's are. The Florida reporter, he says, Dan Mullen on transfers. Is this a Justin Fields reference or nah? So, obviously, for most people, they're going to take this as a Justin Fields reference, and most people are going to take this as a jab against Kirby Smart. Now, we don't know for sure what Mullen's thinking, but it's also not that hard to read between the lines when it comes to something like this. Now, this makes me mad for a couple of reasons. First of all, on the subject of Mullen giving advice to Kirby Smart when it comes to how he handled Justin Fields last year. Have you seen Mullen lately when it comes to quarterbacks? Because let's not pretend that he didn't do everything he could to get in the door with Justin Fields, going to take a visit with him, so much so that he angered the quarterback commit that he did have, Matt Corral. Corral's now at Ole Miss. So Mullen went down the line a long way with Justin Fields, only to get the Heisman, the stiff arm from Mullen, and basically get, you know, shut out and locked down. He took the L there in that recruitment. And then he brings in Emory Jones, who we should not forget was a pretty high quarterback recruit. One-time Ohio State commit, flirted a little bit with Alabama, ends up signing with Florida. Now listen, on this program, I go out of my way not to say bad things about players, even players that don't play for Georgia, even players that play for those lousy, stinking Gators. I don't rip on players here on this show. But when Emory Jones played this season, it left a lot to be desired. There are times that he didn't look much like a quarterback, to be honest with you. So while Mullen's giving advice to Kirby Smart about how he should have handled Justin Fields, How about you develop Emory Jones? You're supposed to be some sort of quarterback whisperer. How about you whisper something to Emory Jones that make him not look like a converted defensive back when he's on the football field? That would be my advice to a Dan Mullen when it comes to that. But then even on the subject of Justin Fields alone, can we treat players as if they need to bear a little bit of the responsibility, the burden of the responsibility for their own decisions? You know, Mullen wants to say that Georgia was completely in the wrong about handling the Justin Fields situation. I myself have said before that Georgia ought to be asking itself privately some tough questions about what really did go on there, and is there something that Georgia could have done to avoid what now seems like a little bit of a controversy. But while I'll say that about Georgia, the one thing that I won't deny is that Fields himself, who I got no beef against, but Fields himself has a little bit of individual responsibility, or maybe even a lot of individual responsibility, for the choice that he made. Because here's what we know. As Fields was on his way to Georgia, really close, well-credentialed advisors were advising him not to do this. And Fields apparently didn't want to listen, and Fields apparently chose to come to Georgia anyway. Dan Mullen doesn't tell you that with his public remarks, but we know that's true. Now you say, B.A., how do you know that's true? Because one of them told us. Trent Dilfer, I'm assuming a close confidant of Justin Fields because he worked with him at the Elite 11 quarterback camp. He's the noted quarterback guru, the head coach of that camp. He told us back in January, or I guess very early February, that he told Fields that going to Georgia was just a bad idea. Here is Trent Dilfer.
I told Justin I didn't think it was a good move to go there. He's a unique talent, one of the best I've ever seen, but I mean, these kids, they think that when they're in high school, they're just going to go in and beat out the stud that's ahead of them. And Jake's a great player. And Jake's a guy that not only is a great player, but he's a player that gets the most out of everybody, and people gravitate towards him. So the dual thing was never going to work, you know, having the two quarterbacks splitting time. And Jake, because of his command of the offense and the success he had as a freshman, to me, I just didn't think it was a good move.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, when it's all said and done, there was a competition at quarterback at Georgia, the likes of which Dan Mullen could only dream of being able to generate with his program. He simply doesn't have enough depth to do that. And Justin Fields, for as talented as he is and as much fun as he is to watch, he took the L to Jake Fromm. Now, speaking of taking L's to Jake Fromm, that's also something that Dan Mullen knows a good bit about as well. And that's the other thing that bothers me about all of this, is all of a sudden Dan Mullen, on the heels of a Peach Bowl victory over, I guess, Jim Harbaugh in Michigan in a top 10 ranking, all of a sudden he feels like he kind of arrives on the scene now as a force to be reckoned with Florida in the SEC. And I think, you know, his statements about all of this stuff and how allegedly Kirby Smart should handle his transfer quarterbacks is sort of built on the idea that Florida's back and the Gators are back and there's a little bit of swagger down there in Gainesville. And obviously the national media, I think, helps generate some of this kind of stuff and get you excited if you're a Florida fan about some of this kind of stuff. But let me promise you and tell you, it is all, for the most part, wishful thinking. But seeing Mullen do all of this just brings to mind some of the stuff that I've been seeing as of late about how this Florida-Georgia rivalry is back. And the Gators are going to be a thorn in Georgia's side once again. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, trying to tout this as the rise of the SEC East. He says, while you weren't looking, the SEC's other division, he means the East, got its manhood back. Dan Mullen brought hope back to Gainesville, Florida, with 10 wins in his first season. And he goes on to say, basically, this is going to lift, you know, the fortunes in the entire division. I hate to tell Mr. Dodd this, but the SEC East as a division isn't rising so much as Georgia, who's won every division game the last 2 years by 14 or more points, is the one that's really continuing to be on the rise. It's not the SEC East. But not to be outdone by that was Bill Bender from the Sporting News, who also recently touted Florida in the pages of a national website. Bill writes that Florida's got a blockbuster opener against Miami, then Tennessee and Auburn, before back-to-back road games against LSU and South Carolina before the matchup against the Bulldogs. Dan Mullen built a bunch of momentum in Gainesville last season. If they beat Georgia this season, the Gators will represent the SEC East in Atlanta. Essentially, what Bender's telling you there is that he thinks that Florida's going to be at least 7-1 coming into that game. And I also, although I like Bill Bender, think that's a bunch of bunk too. Now you may say, B.A., well, why would you be so quick to dismiss Florida and its ability to challenge Georgia in the SEC East here in 2019? For two reasons. First of all, because I know what Georgia's all about, seeing the recruiting success it's had the last three seasons in comparison to Florida, the chasm is as wide now as it's ever been. And more important than that, when it comes to sitting here in this chair and doing this show every single day, we have been down this road before. We have been in this same spot a year ago. The same way Dennis Dodd and Bill Bender and others are saying, look out SEC East, Florida's back. This division's deep and challenging for Georgia in a way that it wasn't back in 2017. This same thing happened a year ago. Another guy that I like, Pete Futak from College Football News, came on this program and essentially tried to make the same case with the SEC East a year ago. Here's Futak from then.
Tennessee and Florida, kind of the same boat, different thing. Tennessee's going to be better. You know, they're not going to win the SEC East, but they're going to at least not be a speed bump like they were last year. And they did have their chances. You know, if they didn't lose, you know, on that last second throw, you know, to Florida. And they had a couple other close calls along the way, and then they just melted down, obviously, at the end. But there's enough talent there where they could be a danger. Florida, I do think, can flip that switch quickly. Remember, you know, they did go to two straight SEC championships under Jim McElwain. So there's enough there where if you get the right formula on the right day, they can absolutely rise up and rock just that one day in a cocktail party where they can pull off that, you know, that upset win. They could be good enough under Mullen to just have that tweak offensively right out of the gate.
Let me remind you, that was last year, before the season in which Georgia would go on to obliterate the East once again, including beating Florida by 19 points. All of this stuff is wishful thinking. The media does not want the SEC East to be boring, therefore they talk up Florida. And Dan Mullen believes his own hype. That's what leads him to start giving Kirby Smart advice about how to handle quarterbacks. But this year in Jacksonville, I believe the results are going to be the same they've been the last 2 years. It was McElwain in 2017. It was Mullen last year. 2019 will be Mullen again. But the gap is still just as wide. It's an easy Georgia win. It's an easy coasting for Georgia in the SEC East. And my guess is Kirby might rub Mullen's face in it just a little bit for trying to tell him how he should handle his quarterbacks. All right, Dog Nation Daily, good to have you here. Fun stuff. Road to Atlanta t-shirts later on. There is some important recruiting stuff to get into with Jeff Sintel. So as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, let's do that right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, Jeff, later on, here's part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. I thought it'd be really fun to go back and look at our experience at Marlowe's last week, where we had a terrific time at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. They rolled out the red carpet for us. Chef's jackets, chef coats. We really got the old treatment. Huge tasting experience with a lot of the great staples on the chef-inspired Marlowe's menu. But we also got a chance to cook up our own creme brulee, or at least heat it up and put that little fiery char coating on the outside of it. I thought it might be fun to walk back and take a look at that before we're done. But if you do not mind, we have some serious stuff to get to before we get into any fun and games. Is that fair here on this Tuesday?
Yeah, man, let's not overcook the brulee, man. Let's get right to it.
All right, so let me start with this. Rakeem Jarrett, the 5-star wide receiver, guy that we've talked about a lot, put out a very interesting tweet recently where it looks like that he's getting ready to make some sort of commitment decision. He put this out on Twitter. In fact, I think we have that for people to see. Yeah, he says, Rakeem Jarrett, commitment coming soon. He's got the party emoji. He's excited about that. Now, Jeff, I said this to our video audience before our show began today that, you know, here we are kind of mid-March. This is about the time where I usually kind of get worked up and worried about something when it comes to Georgia's upcoming recruiting class, so we're kind of right on schedule for that. But Jarrett saying commitment coming soon on the heels of what I believe was a visit to Tennessee this past weekend, does that give a Georgia fan, or should that give a Georgia fan, reason for some pause and some concern?
All right, Brandon, let's have fun with this. Let's do some interactive D&D with BA. Remember those old Choose Your Own Adventure books growing up?
Oh, yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Here's a couple of ways you can take this one. The first one, commitment coming soon. Now, first of all, these young men are not authors. They don't get paid to tweet for a living, of course, but perhaps, and this is the first theory I'll proffer, the first theory was that, which was even, I guess, circulated by the Dog Nation forum, perhaps Rakeem Jarrett is not talking about his own commitment, but perhaps another commitment. That's option A. Let's call that turn to page 47. Option B is, yeah, he's about to commit. He's taken a couple of trips to Tennessee that wowed him. Taking a trip to Georgia as well that wowed him. Lots of schools are in the mix. He's always been a longstanding Ohio State type guy, and lots of folks thought he would eventually end up in Columbus. Number three could possibly mean none of the above right now. Maybe it's you know, option A, option B, or even the third thing, which is, I guess, another thing you got to consider here as well with Rakeem Jarrett, is that the definition of the term soon, because also on social media, I'm sure you saw the initial tweet, but he also said, when a lot of folks said, well, you haven't visited Clemson, so there's no way you're going to Clemson. And then Rakeem Jarrett said that, well, there's no way I'm committing until I see Clemson. So the road's less traveled, Brandon. Which one of those passes, which one of those seems right to you?
Yeah, I think it's difficult for me to say. I guess the reason why I bring up the Tennessee part of this is if you were to ask me which non-UGA assistant might be the most interesting or important to watch when it comes to the recruiting battles over the next couple of years, I might say T. Martin, who's the wide receivers coach now at Tennessee, and I'll tell you why I feel that way. Because we know the Vols are going to recruit well defensively. They've got a really good recruiting-minded defensive staff. But on the offensive side of the ball with Jim Chaney, we know he's not going to recruit. He doesn't leave his office. I don't really know yet about Chris Winkie as a recruiter. I think he's probably a pretty good coach, and he's got, you know, ties to IMG. I'm not quite sure about him as a recruiter just yet. But Martin does have a history of signing five-star guys. He's been at programs where that's an expectation, and he himself has shown an ability to do that. He's also kind of lost some of the shine off of his reputation because of the way that it ends for him at USC. So he's a little bit of a swing candidate here. But he's one of those guys, I think, if you're a Georgia fan, you know, coaching receivers at Tennessee, you do got to pay a little bit of attention to, because if he gives the Vols a recruiting presence on the offensive side of the ball, that's how Jeremy Pruitt goes from being not bowl eligible to all of a sudden maybe being a little bit of a speed bump on Georgia's pathway towards multiple national championships.
So I like that answer, Brandon. I think that, you know, we talk about that topic, current recruiter at another program, a rival program to be on the watch for. I thought Tennessee staff, but I didn't think T. Martin. I thought Derek Ansley. I thought the coordinator of the Volunteers. I think he's going to be a head coach in like 2 or 3 years. I think he's that confident at simply the job of defensive coordinator, but I think bigger things down the road as well. The other guys that I would think about would probably be Brandon Streeter at Clemson, and also yeah. Jeff Scott at Clemson as well. I'm sure you're going to get to the big news from yesterday, but
sure.
That was a nice win for Clemson with Mitchell Mays as they picked up four-star offensive lineman Mitchell Mays last night. And now Clemson's, I guess they're trying to build a great wall of South Carolina, let's call it maybe. They've got four 2020 offensive line commitments already for that class, and they're going to have a lot of guys turn over protecting Trevor Lawrence over the next 2 years.
So before I get to the Mitchell Mays news, a guy that we have talked about a good bit recently, it sounds like, if I'm reading between the lines on you, you're saying, listen, it's not over for Rakeem Jarrett until he has a chance to explore the Clemson situation. So it sounds like that concern that Georgia fans have been growing with Clemson for a lot of elite recruits, it sounds like that's not going out of style in terms of this conversation really either, is it?
I think this is going to be everybody sees these max effort lists on social media and Twitter. I think everybody saw, I mean, recently I think Cooper Mays, the younger brother of Cade Mays, is already pushing up like 4:30 on the bench, making it look quite easy. Well, I think Clemson's going to have their max list in this recruiting class. I think Clemson has the potential to do something impressive, but maybe dastardly inside the mind of Brandon Adams. But they might sign 4 or 5 of the nation's top 10 players this year. And there's going to be a push. There's going to be a push somewhere in this year, in this recruiting cycle, where there's going to be some names like a 5-star quarterback, a 5-star receiver, that all pop to Clemson all about around the same time. And there's going to be a lot of big momentum for the Tigers. And then it's just going to be kind of the bar has been raised, and let's see if the Georgia Bulldogs can meet that challenge and kind of sign a big class of their own, just like the Clemson Tigers going through this cycle.
You know what would be a very scary thought, Jeff, for the rest of college football? Can you imagine if Clemson signed that kind of haul, that collection of elite top 10 talent, get them all jacked up with Osterine? Can you imagine how dangerous Clemson's going to be then?
I mean, really, like – They're going for that rigorous ACC schedule, Brandon. That's simply all it is.
So let's talk about one of the gets that Clemson did have. And, I don't really know how good of a player this young man is yet, but it's a guy that, just given your profiles of him at DogNation.com, I've grown to like. That's Mitchell Mays, the versatile offensive lineman from North Carolina, a state that's been good to UGA as of late. But Mays jumps on the Clemson opportunity and does commit to Clemson. For the folks watching on video, we'll show you his happy smiles about being in the orange and purple. And, Jeff, given the fact they've only signed like 7 offensive linemen the last 2 years, I didn't know Clemson still recruited offensive linemen. So it's partially interesting to know that they're actually still in the game for offensive linemen. But beyond that, what does it mean to you that a Mays jumps on the opportunity at Clemson?
Well, he had lots of love for Clemson early, and also North Carolina. And then he caught wind of the Power G a little bit, was really appreciating Georgia, was going to give him an official, was going to come back for G-Day. And now that kind of all changed, and now that you're a Clemson recruit, you don't expect to take any official visits elsewhere. But with, and I guess big picture is the thing, and Georgia fans probably need to get a good sense of this right now. It's kind of some of the stuff we're talking on the Dog Nation Forum, is I can project, how much did Mitchell Mays, did Georgia need Mitchell Mays? Georgia saw him as a across the front offensive lineman. He could play center, he could play guard, he could play tackle. But in reality, the only person that I think that Georgia's recruiting in the 2020 class right now that sees playing time at Georgia quick might be a Broderick Jones, might be a Tate Ratledge up in Rome. But this is how stacked Georgia is on the offensive line. Georgia could lose 3 or 4 guys to the NFL draft in 2019. They could also lose 3 or 4 more guys to the NFL draft in 2020. And yet the Bulldogs would still be able to put out an offensive line that has 4 guys that are either All-American types or guys that went to the Nike opening final showcase as well. So think about that attrition, Brandon. 7 guys go off to the NFL in 2 years. And yet Georgia might still have a line that looks like Broderick Jones, Owen Condon, Clay Webb, Warren McClendon, Xavier Truss, guys like that. So tremendous what Georgia's doing, and I think Georgia is definitely going to recruit from a position of strength right now on its offensive line. And, very interesting really late for Mitchell Mays. I talked to him after his decision, and that was kind of supposed to be his timeline, which he was going to name a top 5 and cut down his schools. But he got to Clemson, and I'm sure he saw what the board looked like and saw what the spots looked like, and he decided he needed no more time to wait, and he pulled the trigger on committing to Clemson. Nice little bibliography to the Mitchell Mays recruiting story, at least for Dog Nation. As he said, second place was either Auburn or North Carolina. So those two schools, they definitely need offensive linemen more than Georgia had. It really came on strong there in the end.
Yeah, I agree with you, your initial take on this, which is that, Georgia's certainly not desperate for offensive linemen, which maybe, sort of left the, I guess, inability to develop a deep connection with Mays because of other programs who just need him a lot more than Georgia does. But beyond that, one of the things you and I have talked a pretty good bit about is the way in which Georgia and Clemson recruit differently. And I guess here's one of the things that makes the Clemson process and all this a little bit difficult to compete with and combat against, where if a player committed to another school, now in this case, Georgia may not really want Mitchell Mays, but let's just keep this as just a generic conversation, that you always have the hope of, well, maybe you circle back and you win that recruiting battle in the end, that Georgia's going to keep chasing and Georgia's going to keep fighting. But when it comes to the Clemson situation, and Andrew Booth comes to mind a year ago, that once a guy goes to Clemson, because Clemson recruits so few players and because Clemson just kind of, does all of this in just a very different way, I mean, the chances of ever flipping a guy from Clemson are just a lot more difficult. And I guess that's the closest to a compliment I can give the Tigers and Dabo Swinney, but they are probably the hardest program to flip a player from right now, way more so than Alabama, because we've seen Georgia flip players from Alabama and almost, do a few more. It's hard to flip a player from Clemson because Clemson targets so few recruits, correct?
Yeah, and the other thing, Brandon, is I think they're, for all of the grins and giggles, I think the way Clemson does it is a very classy way to do it. It's a very old school way to do it, and that's a program where a lot of people throw around the word genuine, but I think a lot of times genuine does apply to the Clemson Tigers. And they've also got the street cred where they're able to they've got a reputation, and it is well-deserved. It was almost like that that other team in Orange. They talk a little bit like maybe the Clemson Tigers perform and back it up on the field, and yet you don't hear any of the brash bravado out of the Clemson Tigers and Dabo world when it comes to the things they do. I mean, Brandon, real quickly, I just looked at the top 15, and if I had to put markers or bet Dr. Peppers or Coca-Cola's on it right now, I could see a legitimate scenario where Georgia and Clemson, the combination of those two schools, end up with at least half of the top 15 players in the country for 2020. So that's just something to think about.
That's an amazing foreshadowing for what be could to come. It's the Marlowe's Tavern. Tell all here with the Jeff Centell on Dog Nation Daily. And we did have a great time last week at being at Marlowe's, a chance to sample a lot of that chef-inspired food. And we were lucky enough to have, you know, a lot of menu items going to come out our way, whether it be shrimp and grits or the, you know, the French dip or the delicious chicken club or, you know, some of the great cocktails. And when you sample a lot of the different menu items, you really see what goes into each and every one of those items, taking the care to make each individual ingredient, you know, kind of plussing it, making it, you know, better than it would. You know, fried capers, for instance, tastes better than just regular, you know, generic run-of-the-mill capers. When you mix that into the ingredients and recipe, on the entree, all of a sudden you've got an entirely different taste experience. You know, chefs think differently, and chef-inspired food at Marlowe's is going to kind of come to you differently. It was a great experience for us, and one of the reasons why we're such big fans of Marlowe's. We hope you'll check out the Marlowe's in your neighborhood. Text the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. You can become a Marlowe's insider. When big events are happening at the tavern right there in your neighborhood, you'll know about them. You'll also be the first to hear about special offers from Marlowe's Tavern as well, so please make sure you check that out. Okay, a couple things I want to do real quickly, Jeff, before we show our video from last week, kind of some fun stuff. Brock Vandegrift, loved your profile of him at DogNation.com, and for me, this is a really good example or a good opportunity to kind of foray back into quarterback recruiting for a moment. We know about Carson Beck, but there's also that interest of what's next and what the trend is with Georgia quarterback recruiting. Based on the way that Beck has talked, the way that Vandegrift has talked here, the way that Dwan Mathis has talked a little bit, they all mention Jake Fromm a bit when they talk about what they like about Georgia. They see elements of their own game in Fromm's, at least based on their public comments. Is that kind of the thing right now? Is Georgia throwing out that blanket of come here and be the next Jake Fromm? Because certainly Vandegrift seemed to say that, Carson Beck seemed to insinuate that, and Mathis himself just talked a good bit about learning from Fromm. Is the Fromm rise is that the message and the pitch that Georgia's making right now?
Well, I think everybody knows now that, you know, Jake Fromm is the unquestioned starter. If Jake Fromm returns for the 2020 season, I don't even think the most brash or Willie Beeman type recruited quarterback is going to think he's going to take that man's job. And I think it's just an interesting way people view Fromm right now. Maybe it's part of the Justin Fields filter he had to go through and everything else. But I get the feeling that maybe more people won't really judge or appreciate Jake Fromm accurately, maybe until he's gone here. When you hear these recruits talk about him, they know this for a fact. He makes great decisions. He's performed well. And you got to look at it. Which quarterback in college football right now has played better on as many big stages as Jake Fromm has over the last 2 years, especially taking the reins as a freshman, you know, right out of the gate, 2017 starter? I mean, it is very interesting that a lot of people shape their narrative and perception on Jake Fromm based simply on those Alabama games. And it's almost like, you know, all the work he did, like a Florida game, like a Notre Dame game, like an Oklahoma game, like the second Auburn game. Nobody brings up those performances. It all comes down to Georgia LSU 2018 and then Georgia Alabama 2018 and 2018 part two. Nobody forgets about all the, you know, 300, you know, those 420-foot home runs he hit and a lot of other starts for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, he's made himself better in both of his years as a Georgia starter. And as we talked about yesterday, I mean, the people outside the bubble of Dog Nation continue to treat Fromm as if he has a very good chance of being a first-round pick next spring. For a lot of Georgia fans, I don't think they've quite come to reckon with that yet as maybe much as they should, that the NCAA, the national media, and others, NFL draft scouts included, seem to be treating Fromm as a potential early departure. Is Georgia set up to handle that okay if Fromm does leave after this year?
I think so. I think back to the quarterback evolution of the position, they would have a guy in Stetson Bennett that would be around as well. And if, you know, Dwan Mathis, high upside guy, let's just say that, high ceiling, high upside guy. You got to remember, Georgia, a post from Georgia still includes two quarterbacks that were rated among the top 12 in the country at their position. And those guys would only be in their second or first year of eligibility. That's a pretty good quarterback depth chart outlook to think about right there. When you look at the things, how things set up there with Fromm in Georgia. And again, you see, you listen to some of this combine talk coming out, Brandon, about what the NFL guys look for. They look for, and it's almost a hierarchy now, where they look for, the number one thing they look for would be leadership ability, because they expect everybody that's going to get a look by the Sunday league to have the arm strength and enough RPMs on their ball. So then the filter factors for them is leadership ability, and that's coming into situations, winning over teams, winning over locker rooms. Number two is decision-making. That's the all-important quarterback IQ test. Do you know where you want to go to with the football? Do you put the football where your coaches want you to put it and advise you and trust you to put it? That's number two. Already those are two very, very, very big check marks for Jake Fromm. And then the third one is accuracy, and that's, can you put the ball where you want it to on the field? Can you put the ball where you want to, where you need it on the field? And that's an example where Fromm throws guys open, or he throws the ball where guys can catch it, a catchable ball, and then they can run with it. I think when you're evaluating Fromm for Sundays, for beyond Saturday and on to Sundays, those are three very big things right now that will work in Jake Fromm's favor.
All right, let's finish up with this for our audience watching on video. And for those who are listening, radio or podcast, I'll do my best to describe this. You should also check out at Jeff Sintel on Twitter to see this for yourself. So we were at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven last week. Great experience. And at the very end of the afternoon, to kind of cap it all off, what had been just a tremendous tasting experience, lots of entrees, some cocktails, and kind of everything in between, it was time for dessert. They brought the creme brulee, but then they were going to let us, and not like a really good chef would, use the open flame to kind of put the crust on the top of our creme brulee. They taught us how to do that. Jeff, you did it. I did it. You captured my experience on video. You put out the survey. This may be the only time I go head-to-head against you and take the W, but I believe, according to the audience, at least at last check, I was considered the winner for the I don't even know what you call this, putting the crust on the creme brulee. I got to tell you, Jeff, I really enjoyed having the flamethrower, or I don't even know what you call the device. It's basically just a thing that shoots out flames, and I cooked up the final stages of my creme brulee. That was a very satisfying experience, Jeff, if I do admit.
Well, first of all, it's a power trip. Did you get that blowtorch there, and you feel like you're your action figure from 1980s G.I. Joe, 1990s G.I. Joe land. And then it's also, you get coached up before, and the chef, you know, all those chef-inspired menus there at Marlowe's, they told us, you know, you want to get it a little brown. You want to even it up across both sides. And, you know, Brandon, the people have spoken, and I am a Democratic person above all else. And I think I'm willing to concede the race right there. You brûléed far better than I did on that day, sir. The people have spoken, and you are now the title belt holder. You know, when you were growing up, you never thought you'd hold the Dog Nation title belt for cooking a creme brulee, man, but you've earned it. And, you know, one other thing we didn't get into about Marlowe's, Brandon, besides wearing those chef coats, which makes everybody feel about like they're the play caller at the University of Florida, they feel so smart, is that you also have, I mean, talk about what hit you in the mouth a little bit, Brandon. For me, like a three-star Jordan Davis showing up on the line in the Florida game, what about those chickpea fries, man?
Oh, yeah.
They caught you in the mouth, and all of a sudden you're like, hold on, Marlowe's added that to their menu for the spring, along with all those chef-inspired cocktails. It was a great, great time, and I'd love getting the Brandon Adams treatment walking around Marlowe's that day. It was a fun experience for both of them.
Here's the other thing I've discovered. If I'm ever going to give way to mania, I think a pyromaniac would actually be a fairly good choice. If I ever just sacrifice the remaining fragments of my sanity. Holding that open flame in my hand, I got to tell you, that wasn't a bad experience whatsoever. Jeff, what's also a really good experience is both being with you at Marlowe's Tavern last week and being here for the Marlowe's Tavern Tell All right now. We appreciate your candid comments on UGA recruiting. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at dognation.com as well. And then tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. for Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, some more recruiting talk. Can't get enough of that this time of year. We appreciate that. We'll look forward to speaking to you then.
Hey, Brandon, we'll have to get the blowtorch graphic going about which recruits are heating up and which parts of enemy rivals' schedules now look like a blazing dumpster fire.
Yeah, I can only imagine what human resources would say if we brought one of those blowtorches into Dog Nation World headquarters. My guess is we'd be sent back out the door as quickly as we came in.
maybe not, sir. Always enjoy talking to you, man. Have a great day.
All right, see you soon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so what Jeff is too polite to say is that based on the instructions from the Marlowe chef, he actually did his better than mine because he put like a black char on his, kind of like a marshmallow at a, you know, a campfire or something like that. That's what the chef told him to do. I probably didn't hold mine down enough, but visually it just kind of looked better, so that's how I ended up winning the award. What's funny is, like, watch, if you're watching a video, the people in the background are like, why is this Yahoo holding this flame here? And do we need to run out of here before he sets the whole restaurant on fire? But it was an awesome, awesome experience, and the food could not have been better, and the craft cocktails, the care they take in each individual item, just a tremendous experience. It's one of the reasons why Jeff and I are such huge fans of Marlowe's Tavern. A great week for us last week. Got the SEC Through coming here. I want to talk some more about what you may have seen yesterday about Georgia's win total being announced by one of the online sports books, and we'll give away some Road to Atlanta t-shirt before we're done today, too. So that's all coming up. Let me quickly remind you, though, about our friends at Online Trading Academy. Listen, this is the time of your life when you're thinking about investing and, hey, what's the best decision you can make? Well, here's what I do know. There are a lot of different investing decisions you can make, but the first thing is invest in yourself. Because the knowledge you bring in is going to impact every investment you make beyond that. So the best way to do that is with my friends at Online Trading Academy. Because what Online Trading Academy is going to do is going to give you a couple different ways to learn online in the classroom. And then they're going to cover essentially the full spectrum of trading and investing. Asset classes and different kinds of ways to invest your money in the market. It's the kind of thing that is really invaluable information. And you need to check it out for yourself. Go to tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. That's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta, and make the decision to invest in yourself today. All right, here on the SEC Through, I thought CBS Sports had an interesting piece of potential breakout stars for college football in 2019. And this is what kind of also was on my mind a bit when we talked about Andrew Thomas off the top of the program, because Barton Simmons was the writer on this, and one of the names that he mentions as a potential breakout star, not just in the SEC, but in all of college football in general, was Alex Leatherwood, who is legitimately a really good offensive lineman for the Alabama Crimson Tide. If you go back and watch the 2017 National Championship game, Alabama played a lot of true freshmen there that day. Tua Tagovailoa gets a lot of the credit, but Leatherwood playing the way that he did was also, I think, a pretty big boost for Alabama that 2017 National Championship game against Georgia. So it's probably not wrong to single him out as a potential breakout guy for this season. But to mention him and not mention Andrew Thomas, which Barton Simmons didn't, I'm sure Barton's a Thomas fan, but he mentions Leatherwood instead of Thomas. I think this is an example of what the Football Writers Association pointed out on Twitter, which I mentioned off the top of the program. Because Alabama has historically been in the mix for these interior offensive line awards, there's an assumption that Leatherwood, following the footsteps of Jonah Williams, is just going to be the next great offensive lineman in the SEC. When really, the big breakout guy who's already really good but about to make himself a household name in the NFL draft and with national awards, I do believe, is Andrew Thomas. I think the game for him is already there, and now the reputation is going to get built around that. I just think that, A, as a Georgia fan, I've gotten really kind of used to and had a really good time with these award ceremonies where Baker takes home the Thorpe Award or Roquan takes home the Buckus Award, and I'd love to see Andrew Thomas be that next guy. I think that he could be the true breakout for Georgia this upcoming season. Also on this list from CBS Sports highlighting potential breakouts, I'll just focus on some of these SEC names. The LSU defensive back, the incoming freshman Derek Stingley, gets mentioned. And, you know, listen, I still think that LSU has a chance to actually be pretty good this year. I know they lose Greedy Williams. They lose Devin White, but they're still pretty talented on defense, at least in the case of Greedy. They potentially replace him with a defensive back who could be on his way to the same kind of career. I don't think it's wrong to mention Stingley on this list really at all. And then the other SEC names that get mentioned, I want to spend just a brief moment on. Kentucky linebacker Jamar Watson comes up here, and a couple of Mississippi State defensive linemen get mentioned, Fabian Washington, Chauncey Rivers. Rivers, you'll remember at one point in time, was at Georgia. Here's what I think is interesting about the Kentucky linebacker and the two Mississippi State defensive linemen. Think about this just for a moment. Look across the entire landscape of the SEC. How many SEC fan bases right now would you say are dissatisfied with their current head coach? We go through this little stretch, you know, every now and then. We go through this little stretch every now and then where, for the most part, SEC fans are all pretty satisfied with their coaches. And across the SEC right now, that's kind of the case. Maybe Ole Miss fans don't like Luke. You know, he's had a little bit of an issue, but Mississippi State fans are pretty happy with Moorhead. Chad Morris, I think, given the way that he's recruited and the fact that he's brought in a couple transfer quarterbacks, Arkansas fans like that. Derek Mason's gone to bowls. Kentucky finished in the top 15. A lot of the places where you would typically think of dissatisfied, unhappy fans, for the most part, they are all pretty happy. But for those of you that pay close attention to the SEC, you know that can't last forever. And for a couple of coaches who are happy with their fan bases right now, Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State, because he's new, he's still in the honeymoon phase, Mark Stoops at Kentucky, because they had a veteran-laden team that had a pretty good year last year. Because of all of that, how they replace some of the stars they lost is going to determine how much longer fans stay happy. At Mississippi State, they got to replace Montez Sweat. They got to replace Jeffrey Simmons. And maybe Rivers and Washington are the guys that do that. But if they don't, the honeymoon for Joe Moorhead will be over. The same thing for Kentucky. So had Cash Daniel and kid that's going to go high in the NFL draft this year. Kentucky's had a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. Benny Snell at running back. Those guys are gone. How do you replace those? Well, I guess Jamar Watson's going to be the guy that tries to do that for a Mark Stoops. If the departed talent doesn't get replaced effectively, then Stoops goes from being a hero now to on a bit of a hot seat with his own fan base as well. That's the way that kind of stuff unfolds, and that's why these potential breakout stars for some of these, you know, less heralded teams, that's why that's kind of an important thing to pay attention to. We'll make that your SEC through. Okay, here on a Dog Nation Daily, before we give away our Road to Atlanta t-shirt for today and announce how we're going to give away one for tomorrow, let me also take a moment to speak about Bet Online. Yesterday released some over-under totals for college football, the 2019 season. And this is always one of my favorite days, one of those corner polls that you have to get around on your way to the start of the year. I do really, really like it when you have some of these online sports books, or the Vegas sports book, that start making their predictions, because it just gets us feeling like it's closer to the season. They kind of generate some opinions. That's all really fun. And at first glance, if you look at what Bet Online put out, it seems like more of the same from college football in 2019 compared to what it was in 2018. This gap that exists between Alabama and Clemson and Georgia. Alabama's beaten Georgia the last 2 years. Clemson's the reigning national champion. It seems like in the mind of a lot of people, there's a separation between where they are and where Georgia is. And the odds released yesterday would seem to back that up just a bit. Georgia's over-under total of this upcoming season, you can bet that Georgia will have more or less wins than this, is 10.5. For Clemson and Alabama, it's at 11. But here's a point to consider. When you look a little deeper at this, what you realize is the gap between Georgia and Alabama and Clemson may not be quite as great as you think. Because Barrett Salee on his Twitter feed yesterday also pointed out that on each of these bets, there's what's called a little bit of juice. In other words, you have to pay different prices for different bets. And the over bet for Georgia winning more than 10.5 games is actually minus 200. Which on the entire board of over-under bets released by Bet Online is the highest of them all. In other words, you have to bet $200 just to win 100 back on Georgia going over the 10.5. But it sounds like there the online sportsbook thinks that the closer number for Georgia may actually be 11 more so than 10, and that Georgia may be a little closer to being in that Alabama-Clemson category than some other people think. So do with that what you will, but kind of interesting to see some of the online sports books going on the record for what the 2019 season might look like. That's a fun thing to think about. All right, let's get ready to give away a Road to Atlanta t-shirt. I'll also tell you how we're going to give away today's in a moment. But first of all, to the email, which is DNDT-shirts. DND stands for Dog Nation Daily. DNDT-shirts@gmail.com. We asked for folks to send that screen grab showing you subscribe to us on the YouTube page. A lot of you did that. We put them all together. We draw one out, and our winner for yesterday is Scott Boland. So Scott will be in touch with you coming up soon, and for all of our winners, we'll be in touch with you coming up soon. Congratulations, Scott. You have won for today our Road to Atlanta t-shirt. You know, you may be saying, well, B.A., why are you giving away the Road to Atlanta t-shirt? Because it's the very idea that I just talked about a moment ago, that the gap between Alabama and the reigning champion Clemson's not that great right now. But for Georgia to close that gap all the way and get over that final hump, it's got to get back to Atlanta in early December. It's got to beat on the field head-to-head its arch nemesis, the Alabama Crimson Tide. And we think it also wouldn't be a bad idea to go ahead and set the Dogs up to be that number one seed for the college football playoff, stay in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl, maybe get a chance to finally chop down Clemson as well. Especially if Georgia and Clemson are battling head-to-head as much as they are in recruiting, might as well play head-to-head on the field, too, in a national championship game or a college football playoff. Wouldn't be a bad opportunity to do that. So congratulations, Scott. You're the Road to Atlanta t-shirt winner for yesterday. And as we get ready to wrap up, let's also talk about how we're going to give it away today. Once again, it's a Road to Atlanta. Our t-shirt giveaway is at dndtshirts@gmail.com. dndtshirts@gmail.com. Let's do this one because we haven't done it in a while. We love our podcast audience. We love celebrating our podcast audience. We appreciate the folks that listen audio-wise on demand each and every day. We think the most convenient way to do that is on the Apple Podcast Player. No disrespect to the Android devices. I'm sure we'll have some giveaways for them sometime soon. But the easiest way to access the program is right there in the Apple Podcast Player, at least from a podcast standpoint. So if you're an Apple Podcast subscriber, or if you'd consider becoming one as a way of winning a Road to Atlanta t-shirt, send us that screen grab of you. Subscribe to the Apple Podcast Player, Dog Nation Daily, and we'll draw a winner for tomorrow for a Road to Atlanta t-shirt. By the way, speaking of those lousy, stinking Gators, we talked about them earlier. 864 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. We'll see you tomorrow right back here on Dog Nation Daily.